You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Okay, so far we've learned that time can be cloaked.
That time is real, maybe.
And that time may have extended before the Big Bang. Whew, I think I get my head around that, as long as there's nothing more.
Brendan?
Yes?
We do have one more time-twisting tale to tell. But luckily, Brendan, I know you're a big fan of entanglement experiments.
Why, yes, I am. That's where you produce, let's say, two photons at the same time, and they become linked in a spooky way so that no matter how far apart you separate them, operations carried out on one photon always immediately influence the properties of its partner, as though they remain one particle.
Spookier still, in a paper in Physical Review Letters in May, a team of physicists at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem in Israel showed that you can entangle two photons that not only were not produced together in the lab, they don't even exist at the same time. Team member Hagai Eisenberg told me all about how to entangle photons from the future with those in the past.
My name is Hagai Eisenberg. I'm working at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem in Jerusalem. I'm a physics professor here, so I have my own research lab.
So one of the most famous counterintuitive aspects of quantum mechanics is this idea of entanglement. You know, this idea that has been shown in the lab many times that two quantum particles or two particles of light, photons as they're known as, can become intertwined in such a way that whenever you make a measurement on one, it influences the properties of another. Can you explain a bit more about what entanglement is in terms of photons?
Now, the essence of entanglement is that you have two subsystems of a quantum system, and there's no way that we can fully describe one and then fully describe the other and still get a full description of the system. And the result of this inseparability of entangled states is what led to the original so-called paradox, that you measure the first particle and something is changing on the second particle instantaneously. But what is changing, actually, it's a very delicate, and you have to be careful when you say that something is changing on the other particle. What you should actually say, this is how I explain it to my students, I say, our physical description of the other particle is changed. It's only the way we understand the other particle. But there's no real measurement that we can do to see a real effect on the other particle. So nevertheless, Einstein called it spooky action at a distance because he thought that it's already affecting the other particle too much and it violates causality. This was his original claim.
But usually when we talk about that, we talk about two particles being created at the same time so that they're prepared together and they kind of share this bond, this entanglement from birth. But now in your new experiment, you manage to entangle two photons that don't even exist at the same time. Can you explain what you did in your experiment?
I would even emphasize that Einstein even thought that the two particles have to interact in order to be entangled. And by checking what he said, the spooky action at a distance, I emphasize the word distance. Now, it's already known that the two particles don't have actually to interact, and this is a protocol called quantum entanglement swapping. In this protocol, and we are still not talking about separation in time, just in separation in space, you take two pairs of entangled particles, and let's name them. The first pair we will call particles 1 and 2, and the second pair will be called particles 3 and 4, and there is an entanglement connection between particles 1 and 2, and individually separated between the pair 3 and 4. But there's no connection between any of the first pair to the second pair. Now, what entanglement swapping is doing is taking one photon from each of the pairs, so let's say photons 2 and 3, and making what is called a projection measurement. The meaning is that the result of this measurement shows in which way particle 2 and 3 can be entangled, and actually the measurement is entangling them. And the result is that we took two uncorrelated photons, photons 2 and 3, and we entangled them by this measurement, by this projection. And the result is that photons 1 and 4 that never met each other Only photons 2 and 3 have to meet in this protocol. Photons 1 and 4 become entangled. This is what is called entanglement swapping. Now, we took this experiment and just shifted a little bit the order of the events, and this was enough. We only created photons 1 and 2 at the beginning, and then we right away measure photon number 1. So photon 2 is left, it still has some quantum connection to photon number 1, so we keep photon number 2, and only then, after the measurement of photon number 1, we create the second pair of photons 3 and 4. We take photon 3, project it together with photon 2, and get the entanglement connection of photons 4 and 1, but this time photon 4 that is here in the lab is entangled with photon number 1 that was already measured before photon 4 was created. Now, you can trivialize it in classical ways and think, okay, 1 and 2 are connected, 2 and 3 are connected, 3 and 4 are connected, and this is why there is this quantum connection between 1 and 4. But on top of that, there's another thing. You can entangle 1 and 4 in two different ways. And when you measure photon number 1, you don't know what will be the way photon 4 will be entangled with it. And this is decided only after the projection of photon 2 and 3, which actually can give two outcomes. And the specific outcome of this projection decide in which way photons 1 and 4 will be entangled. So we actually end up with one of two orthogonal different possibilities to entangle photons 1 and 4. And in our paper, we show that both of them happened. So it depending on the result of 2 and 3.
So when you say that it hasn't sort of been decided initially the way in which particle 1 and particle 4 will end up being entangled, what do you mean?
What we are actually looking at is the polarization of these photons. So let's just assume the photons are linearly polarized. So the linear polarization of a photon is just the direction the electrical field of light is oscillating along. So we can look at this polarization either whether it's horizontal, horizontally oscillating or vertically oscillating, and we'll call these horizontal and vertical photons, but we're talking about their polarization. But we can also look at 45 degrees, whether it's oscillating on the clock between 1:30 and 7:30, or on the clock between 4:30 and 10:30. So these will be two opposite diagonals. Now, when you're talking about an entangled state, the nice thing about it, that there are correlations between the photons, not just in one way to look at them, not just in horizontal and vertical, but also in the two diagonals. So actually, on any direction you look at the polarization of the photons, you will see correlations. This is specific to quantum correlations. So these quantum correlations are more complicated than just the classical story of a grandfather giving birth to a father that gives birth to a son, and the generations continue. It's more than that, because we really show this entanglement and separability criterion between photons 1 and 4.
What is the most exciting thing about this in terms of our understanding of fundamental physics?
What our experiment is doing is actually intrigue people to think a little bit more about what is entanglement and what are we really saying when we are saying separated systems. So separated systems is not just spatially separated, it's also temporally separated. Now, when you take Einstein's world about spooky action at a distance, about us measuring one particle and affecting the physical description of the other one, and you rephrase it in our experiment, then you get really spooky things, I would say. But what it means when you take Einstein's world and put them into our experiments is that when you measure the particle 1, and the moment you do that, you change the physical description of a particle that wasn't even created yet. So who knows whether you are going to entangle it or not. But nevertheless, if the protocol is running, by measuring particle 1, you changed the physical description of a particle that wasn't even created yet. And when you go the other way, you say, what happens when I measure the last particle? Then you say, okay, my physical description, the way I describe nature, the way I describe particle 1 has to change now, but particle 1 doesn't exist anymore. It's just the way I interpret the results that changed. This is why we can only observe these quantum correlations a posteriori, at the end of the experiment. In no stage in the middle of the experiment, we are able to declare any of the results. These results only exist after all the clicks in the detectors, all the experiment was finished. And then, retrospectively, we say, okay, there were quantum correlations. And this is actually also the reason why you cannot, for example, communicate with the past, send information to the past, affect the past and vice versa to the future. So this is why this experiment, I and you, I guess, because that's why you contacted me, find it interesting.
Then also, are there any practical uses for this?
Surprisingly, we actually found a scenario that is going to happen very soon in quantum networks that is going to actually to be exactly the same like this experiment. Today, there are already a few quantum information networks laid down in big towns like Geneva, Tokyo, and in two, three other places around the world. And what they are used, they are sending single photons in order to distribute secure keys for quantum cryptography, it's called. For example, in Geneva, the links are between banks. Now, there is a limit to how far you can send single photons, because the moment the single photon is absorbed in the fiber or scattered in the fiber and it doesn't get to the other side, and that usually happens after a few dozens of kilometers, then you don't have a way to amplify the single photon. There's a theory called the no-cloning theory, which prevents the amplification of single photon amplitudes. And for that, people came out with a protocol that exploits quantum entanglement swapping in a way to extend the length of these links. These instruments are called quantum repeaters. Now, a quantum repeater is, again, it's just a scenario that uses entanglement swapping. And you can think about a repeater sitting between two banks, faraway banks, one in Switzerland and one in England, and trying to amplify these amplitudes by having a pair created in England and a pair created in Geneva, and one photon from each of these pairs is sent to a middle point where the quantum repeater sits, and the quantum repeater has to do this entangling projection measurement. Now, the guy that sits in London, what our experiment shows is that he doesn't have to wait for a successful projection. He doesn't have to wait until his particle will be entangled eventually with the particle in Geneva. The moment he knows that something is working, he can start operating on his photon without waiting to know that in Geneva there was a photon that was entangled with the quantum repeater node, etc., etc. He just works with his photon, and a posteriori, he just has to know that everything worked in the other places of this link. Only a posteriori, even though he used this particle way before it was entangled with the particle in Geneva, and maybe even the guy in Geneva wasn't synchronized with the guy in London and created it already much after the particle in London was already used. So this is exactly the scenario we show. So it just demonstrates the scenario that is going to happen in real quantum communication networks.
That was Haggai Eisenberg talking to Zia. Also, thank you to @FinnOger, that's @FinnOger on Twitter, for pointing out the coincidence that H. Eisenberg is spookily close to Heisenberg.
Werner Heisenberg, one of the founders of quantum mechanics, was clearly entangled with Haggai Eisenberg before he existed too. But you can, of course, follow us on Twitter @FQXI and email us at podcast@FQXI.org.